Welcome to Traveling Culturati, where we explore cultures and share travel news, travel tips, destinations, and travel chats. Visit TravelingCulturati.com for more information.
Well, hey there, fellow Culturati. Javon Harley here, your host and travel pro for Traveling Culturati. Have you joined our travel club yet? Well, here's why you should. You'll be the first to know when we're on the go, and you get to be part of a fantastic travel group, those who travel for a culturally immersive experience. I tell you, we have such a great time. All you have to do is go to travelingculturati.com. Go ahead and join in the fun. We've got Japan coming up next month in May 24. We also have Peru coming up in August, and we're working on some other fantastic destinations. So again, make sure you go to the website, travelingculturati.com, and join the travel club. Well, welcome back to another week of travel news, travel tips, and of course, some travel chats. Today, our guest is retired Captain Richard Levy. He was a pilot for more than 40 years with major U.S. airlines and is now an instructor. We're chatting about the current state of the airline industry, airplane manufacturers, and the pilot shortage. We'll also have the culture report. But first, you know, we always have to give you a little bit of travel news. So that's where we're going to start things off. I have to make the announcement that Advantage International, our sponsor, was listed by Nouveau Lifestyle as a top company for the category of luxury travel and Black travel groups you should know in 2024. So thank you so much, Nouveau Lifestyle. You can get the full list of Black travel groups you should know in 2024 at NouveauLifestyle.com. Now, the best airports for customer experience worldwide have been chosen by passengers, and that's very important. Now, I know that there are other reports that are surveyed where passengers are surveyed, but this one is all about the passenger or the customer experience, not someone just looking at what the airport has or looking at it in a very technical way. But this is all based on the experience, and they gather this information firsthand and immediately. So while the travelers are still in the airport with their experience, it was done by the Airports Council International World in partnership with the leading travel technology company Amadeus. They announced the best airports for customer experience worldwide as chosen by passengers through the renowned Airport Service Quality Awards, or better known as ASQ program. And it stands out as the preeminent airport customer experience measurement by its commitment to a very rigorous and scientific method. Now, unlike other programs in the aviation industry, ASQ's approach is anchored in live research conducted through surveys administered directly to travelers at the airport, capturing their satisfaction levels on the day of travel. The ASQ surveys cover over 30 performance indicators across key elements of the passenger's airport experience. Well, who topped the list for 2023? Well, over half of the world's travelers passed through the ASQ airport, underscoring the program's credibility and influence in shaping the standards for exceptional airport service. There were 595,000 surveys collected in 2023. And 170 ASQ awards have been won by 90 airports worldwide. Categories for departures include best airports by size and region, as well as most dedicated staff, easiest airport journey, most enjoyable airport, and cleanest airport for arrivals. The category is top airports globally. And there were 9 airports across all regions that have won ASQ awards in all 5 departure categories. In Africa, the airport that won the top of the list was Casablanca Mohammed V International Airport. For Asia Pacific, it was the Sultan Hasanuddin International Airport. In Europe, the Aeroporto de Roma Fiumicino. In Latin America was the Guayaquil International Airport. Middle East is Salalah Airport. And in North America, yes, here at our home, Greenville Spartanburg International Airport. So there you have it. There were other airports who were inducted into the ACI World Director General's Role of Excellence. They are the Shenzhen International Airport, the Shandara Airport, Casablanca, again on that list, Mohammed V International Airport, Muscat International Airport, Cincinnati, and the Northern Kentucky International Airport. The Sultan Mohammed Badaruddin II Airport, and once again, the Sultan Hasa Nudin International Airport, and finally, the Zagreb International Airport. You know, it really is all about the passenger experience, right? I mean, we do love a fancy airport with all the shiny stuff and bells and whistles and the comforts and all of that, but it really is how the passenger experiences it. Well, next up is Disney. Disney has revamped its accessibility service and line-skipping policy due to misuse. Come on, people, why do we do this? People spoil it for others. So anyway, the changes go into effect this spring. Disney announced some of these changes to its Disability Access Service, or DAS, and unveiled new planning resources to help guests with disabilities prepare for a magical vacation, of course. So this past week, Disney updated its accessibility planning guide and recommendations for Disneyland Resort and Walt Disney World Resort with a variety of tools for guests to use when planning their next Disney vacation. The new and improved guide provides greater clarity about the types of accessibility options and which guests they were created for, with, of course, helpful tips like quiet locations where guests can take a break, a list of companion restrooms, guidelines for service animals, transportation around the resort, sensory details for various experiences, and of course some more items that you can look at. The DAS revamp also comes the goal to manage the misuse of the line skipping program and to ensure that the guests who actually need it and that it was intended for can get the access. Effective May 20th at Walt Disney World and June 18th at Disneyland, DAS enrollment for the program will extend to last 120 days instead of 60, and DAS party size will be limited to include only immediate family members or no more than four guests. DSA works by providing those enrolled in the program a return time for attractions, eliminating the need for those guests and their parties to wait in the standby queue. Disney will also be adding more trained cast members in partnership with Inspire Health Professionals to help understand the best tools and accommodations for their needs, while also making sure that only guests for whom those accommodations were intended receive them. Yes, so in the wake of these new changes, Disney is strongly encouraging guests to check out the updated website to view the host of services for guests with disabilities to see which best match what they need. Now, Texas is poised to get America's very first bullet train. President Joe Biden is reportedly seeking to revive a project that would construct a high-speed railway from Houston to Dallas in Texas utilizing Japanese bullet trains. Now, according to Reuters, citing unnamed administration sources, the White House is looking to make an announcement on the project following talks between Biden and Japanese Prime Minister. The Japanese government and the White House declined to comment on the report, though the project has seen renewed support from Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg. Bullet trains can operate up to a speed of 200 miles per hour and therefore pose a potential shortening of time it takes to travel between cities. While by road, it would take 3.5 hours between Houston and Dallas, the train could take 90 minutes. Do you park when you go to the airport? Do you get someone to drop you off? Well, it's being said that it's a much bigger headache these days. Prices are up, and guess what? Thefts are up as well. And of course, this depends on your location. Representative Yadira Caraveo, of Colorado flies frequently for her job as a congresswoman, and for ease and efficiency, parking at her home airport in Denver would make the most sense. However, her family has warned her against the idea. Why? Because of the rise in theft. Denver International Airport is one of several major airports around the country experiencing a rash of crime in its parking facilities. Last year, the airport ratcheted up security measures, adding 11 surveillance cameras in 3 lots, increasing officer presence, and erecting barriers to prevent criminals from absconding with stolen vehicles. Car thefts declined, and Caraveo started to drive herself again to the airport. In January, she introduced a bipartisan bill that will allow airports to use federal infrastructure program funds to battle crime in their lots and in their garages. Now, vehicle thefts are up. The return of air travel after the peak of the pandemic increased the demand for parking spots. The bounty of untended cars has sparked a crime wave in airport parking sites. So vehicle thefts and break-ins at airport car parks have increased since the pandemic, particularly in Philadelphia, Austin, Seattle, Tacoma International Airports. The worst hit airports are typically the ones not easily accessible by public transportation or a distance from downtown, security experts are saying. Tyler Hosford, a regional security manager with International SOS, said that between 2022 and 2023, car thefts increased by 80% at Austin Bergstrom International Airport and 100% at Seattle Tacoma International Airport. And according to his data, which is based on police crime logs, Dallas-Fort Worth Airport reported 946 cars stolen between January and November 2023, twice as many as the previous year. Perry Cooper, senior media relations manager at the Seattle Airport, noted that car-related crimes are a national problem and not unique to airport parking facilities. Only a sliver of the airport's roughly 1.7 million annual customers are victims. So we have seen an uptick in the last few years. However, it's still a very small percentage of overall usage. Over 99.9% of parkers get through with no trouble. Now, are you like me, always kind of leaving something behind? Well, there are tons of items that are lost on airplanes, and they could end up being resold. Yes, there is a facility that resells lost items. So losing, you know, luggage is, of course, a nightmare. But lost items, believe it or not, most often are reunited with the traveler. But sometimes they're given a second chapter thanks to what's called unclaimed baggage. It's a store and e-commerce site that resells many items that vanish during travel. Airlines really are great in reuniting lost luggage, according to Sony Hood, public relations manager at Unclaimed Baggage. Well, that's all I've got for travel news. Hope you enjoyed it. And when I come back, retired Captain Richard Levy is sharing his wealth of knowledge and experience flying for major U.S. airlines for over 40 years. And he'll shed some light on the Boeing issue, the airline industry, and the current and looming pilot shortage.
This is Traveling Culturati. We explore cultures and destinations. We share travel news and travel tips to keep you well informed and prepared for your next travel adventure. So go ahead and up your travel game with Traveling Culturati. Visit travelingculturati.com for more information.
Welcome back to the Traveling Culturati. I'm your host and travel pro, Javon Harley. Make sure you go to the website, travelingculturati.com, join the travel club, and follow us on social media. We have a couple of rooms left for Japan, May 26th through June 5, visiting Tokyo, Kyoto, and Osaka. Fabulous cultural immersive experience there. And again, two rooms left. So if you'd like to join, head on over to the website. And then, of course, coming up in August, we have Peru, visiting Lima, Cusco, Machu Picchu. It is a fabulous destination. That's coming up August 15th through the 25th. Again, we'd like for you to be a part of our travel club, but you can get all information at traveling
culturerati.com. I am super excited about my guest today and having another chat with him, because I spoke to him another time and was super excited and impressed with his background. But, you know, now is really the time, I think, that's very instrumental with having him on. I'm speaking with Captain Richard Levy, retired captain for a major U.S. international airline where he was a pilot for almost 41 years, served 15 years as a Czech pilot, and flew the United States, South America, Europe, North Pacific, and polar regions. So now you can tell why I'm super excited to have him on. Well, hello, Richard, and welcome to Traveling Culturati.
Hello, Siobhan. And it's so great to talk to you again. I love your energy.
Thank you so much. So are we still calling you Captain?
Richard, please.
Okay. But I'm sure anyone who sees you will refer to you as Captain, especially if they've flown with you before or worked with you before.
That's very, very nice. But yeah. I'm one nice guy, Richard.
Yes. So you were a pilot for almost 41 years. I know it's a major U.S. airline. Can you say, or if not, can you give us an idea of what your experience was?
Oh, sure. Sure. I was 41 years with American Airlines, based mostly up at Chicago here, last few years down in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. That was 41 years with American Airlines. Loved every second of it. I was also almost 10 years with the United States Air Force. On top of that, transport air pilot there, flying around the world there. And then where it all started with what we call general aviation, light aircraft, the Cessna, the Pipers. Started very young, age of 14. Can't fly by yourself, Siobhan, until you're 16. So I had, like, the stroller was there all along. That means the flight instructor had to be with me until my 16th birthday. And then I flew solo. And then it really took off from that point. And then went to college in Austin, University of Texas. I instructed men and women in Piper type aircraft. And I flew charters. That's when people pay to fly to their personal and private destinations. And that helped build my experience. I had a whole lot of flight time when I joined the Air Force and then finally American Airlines at the young age of 24. There until age 65, which is the mandatory retirement age.
Wow. Now, it says 15 years as a Czech pilot. What is a Czech pilot?
A Czech pilot is the new term, what used to be called during the time I was a Czech pilot. It was called a Czech airman. And with our changes in titles and labels, this more accurately describes the men and women in the business of every airline has a Czech pilot now. And a Czech pilot wears two hats, Javon. Instructor, teaching people in the simulator, as I do now in retirement. And then the other hat I would wear is as an evaluator. I would make that decision. Is this man or woman ready to fly without an instructor, without an evaluator? If they weren't quite ready, we'd say, let's go out one more time and let's work on this or that. But most of the people will be ready to fly with a crew, whether it's across the United States or internationally. So we would make the decisions, are they ready to go? But in all cases, when the Czech pilot's on board, the Czech pilot is 100% responsible for the airplane, the safety of the airplane. This person has already received hours and hours of simulator training dealing with mostly emergencies.
Ah, okay. So that meant that you were very experienced and trustworthy in this situation to be able to be a Czech pilot. I would imagine that anyone bestowed with that responsibility had to have those credentials.
It was, first of all, an honor to be selected to be part of the cadre, as they call that. And second of all, to groom and decide that a man or woman is ready to fly with a normal crew was an honor. And I treated it as an honor and as a pleasure. It brought a lot of benefits. I was able to fly special projects because of being a Czech pilot. Not only did I get to do it, of course, the other men and women who were Czech pilots also. Very thoroughly and very fun.
One of the reasons that I really wanted to have you on, we're going to talk about a lot of things, but One of the reasons that I really did is because we know there's a captain, we know there's a pilot on board the aircraft. And if you imagine the amount of trust that we put in that individual and the whole airline operation and process, to be honest with you, that, you know, when you board, I mean, of course, you may glance over to see if you can see the pilot and we hear you all. And you all have that same voice, I think, when you get on. And especially when you give the altitude and it seems to have the exact same kind of delivery. But we put so much trust in that, that I thought it would be a good idea to really have you on so we can really understand the profession of a pilot, the passion of a pilot, and how we are with flying and piloting today. So, you know, again, thank you for coming on so we can do that. And one of the reasons that I wanted to go back and establish that is that you said 14. I don't think I knew what I wanted to do when I was 14. When did you know you wanted to be a pilot?
14 is, Siobhan, when I started my first flying lesson many, many years ago for $5. And then I took a second one for $5. And then they said, we need to have a little meeting here, Mr. Richard. That $5 is a marketing deal. We need to go up the price. And they said it in a very nice, polite way. I'm making fun of it, but that actually happened. However, your question is, when did the flying bug bite me?
Yes.
It started at about age 7, age 8. And initially, it was watching TV shows where helicopters were rescuing people, or the light, we call it, private little twin-engine airplane was also go find the sheriff. And I know that's Hollywood and that's a lot of fantasy there, but that caught my attention and it was there all the way to 2024 and it will be there all the way to the end. I love it.
When you hear information about pilots, it seems that most of them knew that they wanted to be a pilot at a very, very early age. So I guess it is that bug that bites at that early age. What is that time frame of training and becoming a commercial pilot?
Well, to become a commercial pilot, and I'll talk about the way it is in April of 2024 for any of the major airlines, Siobhan, and that is they need now at least 1,500 hours, and a lot of those hours have to be in what we call turbine airplanes. Let's just say jet-powered airplane, make it very simple. So that they have to have those hours in some kind of, it could be a small airplane, an airplane flown with what we call a regional airline. They feed the major airlines. Or it could be somebody, a man or woman, who's flown the Learjet, the Falcon airplanes, where they fly movie stars around, actors and actresses around the world. And however they receive their experience, that is sufficient to come to a major airline. Of course, the United States Air Force, United States Navy, Marines, or Army supply pilots with excellent training. And I'm not bragging about myself by any means, but I had a lot of experience when I went to the Air Force. And wow, their instruction is fabulous, procedurally oriented. The other license, my wife and I have a female friend in Colorado, and she almost has all of her hours, and then she needs a particular license, which she's going to get. It's called an ATP. That stands for Airline Transport Pilot Certificate. A lot of big words there, but that's what's needed nowadays. When I started, people had many, many more hours, men and women. But let me say something to reassure you. You're talking about you, Siobhan, traveling with your group to Japan or to Machu Picchu, and you're wondering about the flight deck crew up there. What are their qualifications? Let me assure you, we may have dropped the hours somewhat, all that we mean, the major airlines, but the check pilots, what we were just talking about, they have to pass that gate. They have to pass written examinations, oral examinations, and rigorous flight examinations, check rides, we call them in the colloquial term, in the simulator. That's where we don't get unreal given multiple emergencies, but we give them emergencies more than they'll see in 4 lifetimes, but they have to handle it. And then they go out into the real airplane with one of us, with a check pilot. So in aviation, commercial aviation, military also, and private, you're always being looked at. Might as well face it, you're being examined and checked on the right side and the left side all the time. And it should be that way, Siobhan, so that you are in the back of the airplane and you can take a nap, you can read your favorite magazine, you can have your favorite liquid refreshment or meal and feel relaxed about it.
Well, I can tell you that I certainly do when I board an aircraft. As I said, it's almost a blind confidence that I don't even think about it. I trust in the system and the process that a pilot has gone through rigorous training and the flight hours that are required and necessary, especially because I do a lot of long haul flights. And I can see here with your introduction and your resume that you've done a lot of long haul flights as well. Which particular routes were you on that you flew the most?
The most in the last 5 years before retirement, I flew mostly from Dallas-Fort Worth to Hong Kong. And the average time was 15 and a half hours. One trip particularly I'll never forget, I thought I broke the record. It happened to be all of the flights that week were about 17 hours. It was supposed to be 17 hours and 25 minutes. We went a little faster, 17 hours and 11 minutes, due to two reasons. One, an active volcano over Siberia, coming in Siberian Peninsula, and then to the south of us was a typhoon. So we had to fly a route that wasn't most favorable for time, but it was favorable for safety. And so we put a little extra fuel on board, and we flew to Hong Kong, but just a little bit longer. And people ask me, 17 hours in the airplane? How do you stay awake? Is it boring? The answer is, I've never been bored in an airplane in my lifetime. Sorry to brag, to my everybody feels differently, number one. And number two, United States rules are such that if the flight is over 8 hours, we have a relief pilot, one relief pilot. So then we're a total of three. If the flight is over 12 hours, we have two extra relief pilots. That is a total of four. So we're constantly taking crew breaks. I will make the takeoff perhaps, and then I will go take a crew break for almost 4 hours and then come back up, work for 4 hours, go back for four, and come back up, and I'll be fresh for a landing. And that's what most of the major airlines do. There are little exceptions here and there.
I see. Now, you retired in 2018, but you weren't ready to really retire because you then became an instructor.
Right. I was not ready to retire. And I asked every little spy I could get. I say jokingly, a spy, of course. I called the organization in Montreal, Canada. That's the headquarters of ICAO, International Civil Aviation Organization. Siobhan, it really doesn't matter what the United States government decides. If they move the retirement age to 70, that's for the United States. I want to fly internationally. So I called up there about 2 to 3 months for retirement, and I talked to this nice lady. I said, any rumors of changing that retirement age for international flying? And she said, so sorry, it's 65. And it's, when you retire, it still will be 65. So I got a grip and accepted it and went out with a smile, of course. But I was ready to continue going. I fly the simulator where I train right now at another airline when I have extra time and feel very comfortable. And I just want to be Mr. Modest and say I feel very comfortable. Now, other people, they want to get to age 60 and say bye-bye. And I wish them well. But this guy you're talking to right now, love to continue it on. But as my wife says, it is what it is. And that's the rule. To move the retirement age, in 2007, they moved it from age 60 to age 65. So I was lucky to be on that side of it, that I could ride that wave to age 65. And there was just recently a movement in the House of Representatives in the United States to move it to age 67, but it was defeated, I believe, in the Senate. So didn't happen. And again, the international flying limit is age 65. So that's where we are right now.
Okay, so international is 65 and the U.S. is now 65. But if they had raised it in the U.S. to 67 and the international was 65, what would that have meant?
Very, very good question. I'm being very sincere when I say that. That would have meant that I could have flown only within the United States. And I would have done that if that's what I had to do. Back in 2018, that is when I retired, My research showed Japan, where you're getting ready to fly to with your group, and they're lucky you and lucky your group back there, get some good green matcha tea and sushi. But Japan, I believe, moved their retirement age up to perhaps 67 for domestic flying. I think the Philippines did also, not positive. But again, that's domestic flying only. And I haven't checked into to confirm that. I believe Canada does not have a retirement age. I don't know if that's true for domestic flying. So what's their restrictions in Canada? If that is in essence true, Siobhan, that means as long as a pilot can pass, number one, the physical that you receive, the examination, thorough examination every 6 months, at least in the United States every 6 months, and two, your proficiency checks in the simulator, you're good to go as long as you want to keep doing it. So that would be wonderful if that's the way it was, but there are all kinds of factors out there that are limiting to age 65 in the United States.
I see. Now, what about eyesight? Can you wear glasses or not wear glasses? Is there a requirement for eyesight?
Many, many moons ago, Siobhan, one had to have 20/20 vision. Gone with the wind. Same with the Air Force. One had to have 20/20. Gone. Thank goodness. What about this fantastic woman or man, aviator? Great flyer, knows the procedures, policies of the airplane and the airline. And just because they wear glasses, what difference does that make? Not a bit. So nowadays, to answer your question, glasses are certainly approved. And of course, the bottom line, the vision has to be corrected to 20/20, which is what it is. I worked today with one person who's wearing glasses, made not a bit of difference.
So now you are an instructor. Are you an instructor on the types of aircraft that you have flown?
Wow, very impressive. Very good question. The answer is, where I worked at American, they did have this airplane, this Boeing 737, but the answer is I had not flown that. So here you are, this retired airline captain from a major airline, having spent my last 13 years on a wide body, the Boeing 777, takeoff weight of 775,000 pounds, and now I am going to learn, yes, from scratch, the Boeing 737, a wonderful airplane. I know we're going to talk about that in a moment, but I had not flown that. Had I flown many other types of Boeings? Yes. So I went through the school. I went through the ground school, the classroom, the simulator training, and then instructor training. So no, I had not flown that. So I got to experience a bit of my own medicine, learning from the beginning. But it was a blast. I love it. It's so fun.
It just seems like it's a career that is just continuing to give back to you in so many ways, and you giving back to it as well. But you do have a lot of, maybe not on the 737, but you do have a lot of experience flying Boeing aircraft.
I do. My whole career started before a lot of your listeners were born. I started in November of 1977 on an airplane called the Boeing 727, three engines in the back to make it simple. And I was on that until the middle 80s. And then I started to fly wide body international flying on the Boeing 767 and another airplane called the Boeing 757, flew that South America. And then in 2005, I transferred and transitioned to the Boeing 777. So the whole career, except for 6 months, was on another wide body that's gone from now. But it was almost, you can say 99% of my experience was on a Boeing airplane.
Boeing, been in the news a lot lately. We have the 737 MAX 9. We have the plug type door, which none of us even knew anything about until this incident happened. There have just been a lot of incidents with Boeing in the last few years, and now even within the last month or so. What's going on with Boeing, or what do you know about these incidents that have happened? Let's start with the 737 MAX 9.
Okay, good question. The plug door, what happened on the Alaska Airlines airplane? A plug door is a door that there's no reason for passengers to know a thing about a plug door. We in the industry do, but a plug door holds a spot for another emergency exit. Why would you want another emergency exit? Very simple, because whether it's Alaska Airlines or Ryanair over in Europe, any other operator, the 737 MAX 9 wants to add seats. If you have more seats, you have to have more emergency exits in the unlikely event of an emergency evacuation. So that's the reason. And if you're not going to purchase the extra door because you don't need it, you'll have the plug door installed there. So what happened on this airplane, the fuselage was built in Wichita, Kansas by a company Boeing used to own called Spirit AeroSystems. And actually Boeing's in negotiations right now to buy them back. But they built the fuselage. They sent the fuselage and fuselages of other airplanes, of course, via rail over to Seattle, to Renton, Washington. Boeing has factories all over the Seattle area. So the fuselage showed up there, and a mechanic, some inspector, noticed what we call rivets. Now, what is a rivet? A rivet, when you're sitting in the airplane, looking out over the wing, thousands of rivets. Let's just call them little bitty screws. Just keep it simple, okay? So there's rivets on top of the wing when you're flying. In any event, on top of the plug-type door, somebody at Boeing, it could have been from Spirit AeroSystems working there temporarily, or a Boeing mechanic, noticed these rivets were loose, weren't fastened. I think they were not fastened correctly. That I'm not positive about. But nevertheless, it needed to be fixed. So they took the plug-type door. Now, remember, the airplane's still at Boeing at Renton, Washington. They took the plug-type door out, fixed the rivets. That was not an issue. The rivets are fine. And then he put the plug-type door back in. Here is the $64 million question, whatever the cliche is. What happened to the four bolts? The door requires four bolts to fasten it securely. It's fastened securely otherwise, but these are the main parts that hold it on. And they were missing, apparently. How did they find that out? Siobhan, when the door came off the Alaska airplane in January 4th, I believe, or January 3rd of this year, and ended up in the backyard in Portland, Oregon, they found the door without the three or four bolts that were missing. Yes. So what happened? That is an investigation by Boeing, Alaska, the National Transportation Safety Board, that's the investigative arm for aviation in the United States, and the DOJ is getting involved also. And they often get involved, DOJ, to see if there's any mischief there by a person or persons. So Boeing has the airlines, the major carriers that fly the 737, all models of 737, Siobhan, not only the Dash 9, the Dash 8, and the original models of the 737 said, you need to get your house in order. Now, again, I flew Boeings my whole career. It's a wonderful airplane. Is Boeing focused more on getting the airplane out and into the sky and making money, or are they focused on safety? They're focused on safety. I wouldn't have flown one. You're going to fly on a Boeing, most likely. They're great airplanes. So the quality assurance is what needs to be revisited. They had a term at Boeing called travel on. It has nothing to do with the passenger traveling. The airplane is coming down the assembly line, Siobhan, and I'm going to just simplify this. Coming down the assembly line, and somebody installs a certain part. The fuselage moves to the next station. Something else is installed. If a part was not ready to be installed, what Boeing would do is, not all the time, by the way, to clarify, they would travel on, send on the fuselage, and they would come back later and put that missing part on there. So that is what's going to be stopped right now, unless there are safeguards by an inspector, a supervisor watching to be sure that a part's not missed. So what happened with the four bolts? There's not a paper trail for that. That's a big mystery. I don't quite understand that. Why not? And they've already have names of people who worked on the airplane. So that's what happened there. The 737 MAX is a wonderful airplane. It's a safe airplane. And now anytime an incident happens with a 737 MAX, they're pointing fingers back at Boeing. That's not totally fair or true. In fact, I was just interviewed recently about a 737 MAX that went off the runway in Houston. Had nothing to do with Boeing. It had to do with other issues, 100%. So it's not all Boeing.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Such an honor and a pleasure.
Thank you, Siobhan. Anytime, all the best. Have a great life. And thank you to taking care of all your travelers. Be good. Be healthy. Bye-bye.
Well, when I come back, I've got the culture report.
This is Traveling Culturati. We explore cultures and destinations. We share travel news and travel tips to keep you well informed and prepared for your next travel adventure. So go ahead and up your travel game with Traveling Culturati. Visit travelingculturati.com for more information.
Welcome back to the Traveling Culturati. I'm your host and travel pro, Javon Harley. Make sure you head on over to the website, travelingculturati.com, and sign up for the Travel Club, the newsletter, and also follow us on social media. Culture is forever changing and reflecting what's happening in the society and with its people. It can be born of the arts, music, food, and sometimes politics and strife. This is the Culture Report, and today we're talking about treehouse culture. Joining me in the discussion is Maha Kikugawa, who is the co-founder, chief branding and marketing officer for At Treeful Treehouse. So hello, Maha, and welcome to Traveling Culturati.
Hi, nice to meet you here.
Absolutely. So first of all, let's establish that the Treeful Treehouse is located in Japan, but exactly where is it located?
Treeful Treehouse Sustainable Resort is located in the Yanbaru Forest in Nago, a World Heritage in Okinawa, Japan.
In Okinawa, okay. I have been seeing the recent years a lot of sustainable and treehouse accommodations, and it's become like a whole culture. I mean, people are really looking for unique accommodations, but would you put it in the category of glamping because you're kind of looking for something a little unique as well?
Yes, I would. Treehouse is where the house on a tree and you can stay there and then you can enjoy unique activities such as river trekking, relaxing in a sauna treehouse or fireside dinners and tours.
Okay, so now the Treeful Treehouse Resort, are there multiple accommodations or how many treehouses do you have?
We have right now 5 treehouses and you can book through a website and then you can choose which treehouse to stay from this coming spring.
Okay. Now, so what would qualify as a real treehouse?
A real treehouse has to be hang from the tree. So that means supporting all the weight of the house with living trees with no columns from the ground.
Okay. So it's built within the tree itself, not inside, but of course, you know, amongst the branches and pretty much high above the ground. So no other supporting structures other than the tree itself and, of course, the building of the house.
Yeah, exactly. It's built from above to below from the branches. All the weight is suspended from above from with wire.
Ah, suspended from wires. So the wooden structures, because I have been on your website and to see the accommodations, some are glass encased and some, you know, of course, with the other parts of the structure. So how much of the tree is, I don't want to use the word compromise because I understand that because you don't have the other structures, you're not interfering with the tree itself.
Yeah, exactly. It's just a few bolts that we have to put in order to suspend the treehouse from the above. So, for example, you can imagine like humans, we have pierced ears sometimes, but it's not like anything harmful to us. So it's the same thing to the tree. And then it's completely okay for the tree to be stay healthy.
So what makes it sustainable?
Well, treehouse itself is carbon negative, which means it absorbs more carbon dioxide than it produces since the treehouse is living on a tree. And we have a lot of other sustainable initiatives around the resort. Like we don't use any fossil fuels and we use only electricity. We have space and for space, we build the higher than 1.2 meters and higher from the ground. And anything we construct is on more than 1.2 meters up from the ground because we want to have the sunlight and the rain to be on the ground. So the animals, microorganisms and roots can live on around underneath the tree houses.
I see. And what about electricity? These common creature comforts that we humans like to have.
Yeah, it is easy to use fossil fuels and use gas, but we use electricity, and we have a solar panel in Okinawa to create more electricity than used. And we use all environmental eco electricity from local Okinawan Electric.
Are they en suite as far as the bathrooms are concerned, showers, toilets? How is that approached?
For water, we use this sustainable heating machine. For that heating machine, we use surplus electricity at night to boil the water and then use it during the day. And we dug the well in order to pull the water. And we don't use any chlorine, but we use UV light to safely provide the water for the guests. And for waste coming from toilet, we have normal toilets, of course, but we also have compost toilets that we use the dirt to grow our bananas tree in the garden. And that's part of the sustainable initiatives.
I see. And with the accommodations, you said you have five tree houses. What are some of the other facilities within the resort? And are they part of a tree house accommodation, like restaurants where people come together in common areas?
We have this luxury glamping room called Aero House. So what you can do is when you go stay here, you can stay in this Aero House luxury room and the tree house together. And the luxury room has a terrace part that you can have a fireside dinner. So it will be a set when you stay.
And the location within the Yan Baru Forest you mentioned. So, what else in the area is it all really about nature and camping and glamping and taking advantage of nature's activities?
Yeah, actually, there's not that many people. Like, it's not a very populated area, and it's very forest and with diverse nature. And there's a lot of animals that might be going extinct. So you can do river trekking to see those unique animals. And we also offer river trekking for free for guests who stay at Treehouse.
So it's on the river.
Yes, on the side of the river.
Okay. Well, I have perused your website and it looks just divine and certainly would appeal to anyone who's looking for some glamping. But a question comes to mind. How did you get started in, I know that you're a co-founder, but get started in saying, I want to build a tree house or a tree house resort.
Right. So I grew up in nature thanks to my family who took me to nature all the time. So I wanted to somehow give back to nature with my job as well. And I wanted to do something related to environment. And I studied environmental science in the university. And also I went to the Galapagos Island to study biology. And then I wanted to somehow do something that make me give back to nature. And at that point, my father was saying he wants to make a tree house, but which was his dream since he was little. And I was like, oh, I will help you. And then we wanted to make the sustainable resort from the beginning, because not just to make the tree house just for ourselves, but so that the guests can feel the sustainability is important. Nature is very crucial to our everyday and long term. So we wanted to make a treehouse resort from the beginning in 2014, and now it's been around 10 years.
Oh, well, congratulations. Tell me about the party tree deck that I'm reading about.
Oh, yes. The party tree deck is built on several tree branches, and it is where people have fireside dinners. So you can make your own dinner outside in the forest, basically on the tree.
And what's the most important step in making a tree house?
We have this rule that we have to respect the nature first. So everything is nature design. And making the tree house or making any bridges around the resort, we always have to design things around all the branches, all the trees, so we don't cut any trees. So we fit the tree house design and other things designed around the shape of the tree.
Okay, so the tree itself needs to be big enough to support a treehouse? And so what kind of size do you typically look for that would accommodate a treehouse?
It can be around 65 to 70 centimeters in circumference, the length within the circle to support the treehouse.
I see. And so do you all have any plans to expand either in the area or maybe look for some other areas and another treehouse resort?
Yeah, we are building a lot more in the same area. We have our treehouse builder team. So we are always building new treehouses and we're at least making 10 treehouses in the same area. And then we are planning to expand overseas as well.
Overseas, maybe the United States or what country?
Yeah,
what country are you eyeing?
We are thinking right now Southeast Asia because it would be sustainable to hire the people there as well as the GDP there is low and some people cut trees to make money right away, which is not sustainable environmentally. So we want to help the environment by nature by making the trees into treehouse also and also hiring them and helping the people around. So that is suitable for Southeast Asia at this moment.
Okay. So what is the website for more information?
Our website is treeful.net, N-E-T, so treeful.net.
Thank you so much for joining me today. It was such a pleasure chatting with you. And I absolutely love your website. I think I'm going to have to stay in a treehouse one of these days.
Please come.
Ladies and gentlemen.
This is Traveling Culturati. We explore cultures and destinations. We share travel news and travel tips to keep you well informed and prepared for your next travel adventure. So go ahead and up your travel game with Traveling Culturati. Visit travelingculturati.com for more information.
Ladies and gentlemen.